What is up, you guys? Welcome back to the Fast and Flow podcast. I'm your host, Fast and Flow, otherwise known as Catherine Kelly, your running bestie, a New York City-based long-distance runner and certified personal trainer, and 2023 New York City Marathon finisher, baby. Let's go! Obviously, this podcast is going to be a recap of the New York City Marathon. There's no update to do beforehand. The update is the marathon, so let's just get right into it. Yesterday was the best day of my life. Truly the best day of my life. Every single time I think about it, I just start hysterically crying. Before I even do any of this recap, I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for following along my entire training block, for all of the kind messages, everyone wishing me well, everyone tracking me on the app, everyone cheering for me, everyone supporting me. Like, I knew that you guys were invested, and obviously that's a large part of the reason you follow me, but I didn't realize what an outpouring of love and support I was going to get. Like, it was to the next level. I was truly not expecting that. And I had so many people messaging me, why do I feel like I'm so invested and I don't even know you personally? Why do I feel like this is literally me running? I'm so emotional. I literally gasped the moment that I saw that you finished in 3:12. I was like, wait, I just didn't think people cared that much. Like, obviously I know you guys care, but maybe this is sounding obvious to you, but I don't know. It's hard for me to grasp because I sit here and I make these videos, but I'm by myself. And so I can't really understand sometimes how it impacts other people. And I know that a lot of people follow along and are kind of more silent followers. Like, there's a lot of people that I follow on social media, whether it be on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, podcasts, that I've never messaged them before. I've never, you know, spoken to them, but I'm such an avid follower of their content. They really make a huge difference in the quality of my life. They make me a better person. They make me want to push harder. They make me want to reach for my dreams. But they don't know that because I never messaged them. But it never occurred to me that there might be people like that for me. But after this marathon, I got probably like, I got hundreds and hundreds of DMs. I could have gotten 500 DMs. I don't even know how many I got between DMs and comments, like just thousands of messages. And I don't think you guys understand how badly I was relying on you at miles 24, 25, 26 of that marathon. Like, I wanted to stop so badly, but at the Nike dinner on Thursday night before the marathon, a sports psychologist spoke, and he was like, something that a lot of athletes have in common, a lot of pro athletes, is that they're doing something for a purpose bigger than themselves. And a lot of times when we think of purpose, we think of what we're doing, but it's actually why we're doing it and who we're doing it for. And that stuck with me like nothing else. Like, when I was in the pain cave those last couple miles of the marathon, which we'll get to, But I heard people yelling Catherine, I heard people yelling Fast and Flow. I couldn't even turn my head to look, but just know I heard you guys, and it just like each one of those screams was just like, just keep going, just keep going. There are other people that you're doing this for a cause bigger than yourself, to inspire other people, to show other people that it's possible to reach dreams they didn't even think were possible, to break past their self-imposed beliefs and do things out of their wildest dreams. Because for me, that's what yesterday was. That was something out of my wildest dreams. Like, oh, okay. But let's go back to the beginning. Oh my God, I see I'm already crying. I don't know how many times I'm going to cry during this podcast, but let's go back to the beginning. Let's start from when we woke up. We woke up around 4 a.m, got out of bed around 4:15, 4:20 a.m., which was early, but our ferry was 6 a.m. So we had to get up. Immediately, I made my oatmeal. I made brown sugar. It was like maple and brown sugar oatmeal. Oh my God, so good. I have to have something like really sweet when I'm waking up that early in the morning because I hate being up that early. So I need something that is really easy to eat and sugary. So I made my maple and brown sugar oatmeal with almond butter and half a banana. And I ate that with, I made myself an espresso latte with some cashew milk and iced latte. And it was so good. I was looking forward to eating it. And the night before, we had actually eaten pretty early. We ate at 6:30. So I wasn't hungry by any means at 4:30 in the morning, but I wasn't like, oh my gosh, I'm so full because I ate dinner a few hours ago. Luckily, we ate early, or not luckily, we planned to eat early enough, and thankfully we stuck to that the night before. So that was great. And the night before, if you're wondering, we had pasta and chicken. I made us pasta and chicken at home. That's literally all we ate. So that was it. We didn't eat vegetables, nothing, because I just didn't want to take a chance with having like too much fiber or anything like that. So that worked out really well and just made sure I was staying hydrated. I actually was having trouble drinking enough water because I wasn't sweating a lot or anything in the few days, honestly, in the week before the marathon, because I wasn't doing as much. So I just got myself some pink lemonade and was just chugging pink lemonade because the main ingredient in the pink lemonade was obviously water. So I was just chugging that. But we ate our breakfast. We got our clothes on and quickly went and took the dog out. Pleasant surprise when I took the dog out. It was so gorgeous outside already at 4:45 in the morning. It was beautiful outside. I could have taken my sweatshirt and sweatpants off. Like, I was totally fine. So that made me really happy because I get very concerned about being too cold. I have Raynaud's disease. So like my extremities get really cold. I have really poor circulation, my fingers and my toes specifically. So that's always a major concern for me when I'm waiting to race. So thankfully, when I took the dog out, I was like, okay, it's really nice outside. This is going to be awesome. And got back inside, got Brett, and then we Ubered down to the Staten Island Ferry. We were taking the ferry. We live on the Upper West Side, so it's quite a far train. It's about like a 40, 45-minute train ride from where we are. So we just decided to Uber down the West Side, which took about 20 minutes, maybe 20, 25 minutes. It wasn't too bad, but we did end up missing the ferry that we were supposed to take, which was the 6 a.m. Luckily, the ferries were running every 15 minutes, and it was no problem. We got on the 6:15, and it was totally fine. This whole time, I'm honestly just so hyped, so excited. I was way more nervous the day before and like the 2 to 3 days before, honestly. But the morning of, I was like, it's game day, baby. Like, this is the show. I kept saying that. I was like, this is the show. It's fucking game day, baby. I just kept saying that to Brett. And it was just kind of making just light of the situation because I really was nervous deep down. But I was like, this is honestly the best day ever. And it was beautiful outside. We saw so many people that, I mean, I didn't know who they were, but people were coming up to me. They were like, I follow you. I don't know if this is weird, but I follow you on TikTok. I follow you on Instagram. Like, I love your stuff. I listen to your podcast, whatever. And I was like, oh my God, it's not weird at all. Like, please, please come up to me and say hi. It just made my day. And even Brett was like, wait, this is kind of crazy because there are people from the UK, people from Germany, the Netherlands, just like so many different people coming up to me, messaging me. He was like, okay, you're a rock star, Kathy. But seriously, it was really cool. I felt awesome. Like that was my Super Bowl. Okay. The New York City Marathon is my Super Bowl. The New York City Marathon is Staten Island Super Bowl too, for sure. All these people coming to Staten Island. But we took the ferry to the bus. I honestly felt like I was going to prom for some reason, because when we went to prom, we took buses and I was on bus 4. And the reason I can even remember this is because the entire time we were like, here we go, bus 4. And so this time we were on bus 12. Like, it was that was just the 12, like, it was, there was like 20 different stations and buses were just constantly pulling up, and then people would get on, they would go away, start driving to the Star Village, and the next wave of buses would come up, and we were on bus 12. So I was like, here we go, bus 12, just trying to hype myself up, being silly. You kind of have to keep being silly, just keep talking, distracting yourself, because from the time we woke up to the time we actually started racing was 5 hours. So it was a really, really long time. That's like, we woke up at 4 and started racing at 9. So I just kept talking, kept making light of the situation, kept making jokes, and just kept trying to have a good time and goof around, which was really nice. And I was just taking little video clips of everything. The sun rising over the Staten Island Ferry was the most beautiful sunrise I've ever seen in my entire life. Granted, I do sleep in quite a lot. I'm not a morning person. I'm trying to become a morning person this winter, though, because now that daylight savings is here, it's honestly really, really depressing. But anyway, I was like, this is insane. This is a sign. It's going to be a good day. It's a great day to have a great day. I'm lucky to be here. And we finally got to the Start Village. We got to the Start Village and we walked up basically like to where everything diverges. So Brett was in pink wave. Or sorry, Brett was in the blue wave and I was in the pink wave. So we ended up having to split up. So we were kind of waiting until we had about 20 minutes to go before we split up, because I didn't want to go to the Start Village and then be waiting by myself and be really nervous and like ruminating in my head. So we were at the Start Village. We go to the porta potties one last time and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to take my sweatpants off now. It's really warm. I'm ready to go. I start getting my spy belt on, putting my gels and everything away. And I look into my bag and I'm like, oh my God, I forgot all of my gels. Like, I had 4 gels and I forgot them all at home. And Brett comes out of the porta potty and I'm like, I forgot my gels. And his mouth just drops open. He's like, what? Like, are you freaking out? What are you going to do? Honestly, I was so incredibly calm in that moment, which is very odd because I thought I would have been really freaking out, but we had extra scratch gummies, which I loved training with the scratch gummies, but it's pretty hard to chew when you're running at marathon pace. So I had just wanted like the gooey gels that you can just squeeze into your mouth. But alas, we had some extra scratch gummies and Brett so kindly gave me one of his like goo gels. We were using the Science and Sport gels and he sent me a screenshot the other day from New York Road Runners that said that the CIS gels, the Science and Sport gels, would be available at miles 12 and 16. So I was like, okay, it's totally fine. I have enough to get me to mile 12. I'll just grab two gels at mile 12 the next one was at 18. I'll just grab another one at 18. I ended up doing that. It ended up being totally fine. But I was like, this is what we're working with. We can't freak out now because that's not going to do us any good. And I was just trying to stay calm before I started the race. But yeah, when I looked in my bag and realized I forgot all my gels, I was like, no freaking way like that happened. That is so like, that's such a rookie move, and I just forgot them. But we did have a scratch Rice Krispie and a Cliff Bar. We each had that, and then I also had salt stick electrolyte tablets. So I definitely had a bunch of stuff. So I was like eating stuff before the race too, after I had eaten breakfast. So I was basically just still trying to carbo load right before the race and drink electrolytes. I had my high sodium scratch carbohydrate in my water bottle, and I drank a liter of water in the morning. I just brought it with me on the bus and on the ferry and everything, and just drank that before the race started. So by the time the race started, I felt like my glycogen stores were really high because I'd eaten a lot the 3 days beforehand, but I hadn't really exercised that much. So I just had so much stored energy in my body and I was ready to go, and I was hydrated. So I was feeling good. Brett and I split up and I start walking to the pink corrals, and I'm like, okay, I'm on my own now. It's game time. Let's start focusing. Let's start visualizing. I can't believe we're here. So I walk into the pink corrals. I have to ask a couple people, like, is this the right way to go? Okay, let's go. And at this point, it's like 8:30 and the corrals close at 8:45. So I felt like we planned it pretty well. We weren't waiting around for too long, but now it was time to go into the corrals. So I enter the pink corrals and I'm standing there. I'm getting kind of nervous, but I'm like, okay, there's still like 35 minutes until we race. And then it dawns on me, oh my God, I haven't warmed up. I haven't stretched. When I tell you I was out, my brain was out to lunch. Like, I was just so overwhelmed and distracted that I didn't even do any warm up, no stretching, nothing. So I quickly run out of the corrals with probably 5 minutes to go. It's like 8:40 at this point. And I'm just doing some like high knees, some butt kicks, just doing some like random, I'm running back and forth in this like little 20 meter long area, just trying to warm myself up, kicking my legs and whatever. And I hear somebody yell, Catherine Kelly. And I turn and it's someone from my high school, which was so funny. So I said hi to her, and I finally was like, okay, there's only, I think it was 8:43 or 8:44 at this point. The corral's closed at 8:45. So I was like, I need to run into the corral. Warm up has to be done, which it was kind of a fake warm up, but it was something at least. So I go back into the corrals. At this point, I take off all my stuff and I put it in the donation bin. And now I'm just waiting there. And so it's 8:45. There's still 25 minutes to run, but the corrals are closed. I go to the bathroom one last time. Thankfully, like, no issues with that. Everything was totally fine. And there were porta potties in where the corrals were, which was nice because there weren't lines for those. So went to the bathroom one last time. And then I put my headphones on and started listening to music to pump myself up because there was a lot of nervous chatter going on. And I just was like, I need to get into the right headspace right now, and I need to get focused. So I played music for a little bit, but then they started singing the national anthem. They started announcing the start of the race and everything. So I took my music out and was listening to all of that, listened to the national anthem. And then they were like, okay, runners, we're going to start moving up. This was probably at 9 a.m. And I'm like, oh, when they say that and then people start walking and you're like, oh shit, this is real now. Like, we're really going. I started freaking out. I have a couple video clips of me just being like, what the hell? Like, I'm so scared. This is crazy. But I'm so scared, but I'm excited. And everyone starts walking up and getting onto the Verrazano Bridge. And so, like, I was in corral C. So A and B were in front of me. So I can see them like heading up onto the bridge. And you can hear, you like hear the gun go off and you're like, okay, like they're starting, they're out, they're ready to go. And at this point, you're like, oh my God, like, I just can't even believe I'm here. There's so much emotion going on. They're always playing New York State of Mind. So it's just like, start spreading the news. And I'm just like, I'm crying. I'm so excited to be there. I'm talking to everyone around me. It was just like the best energy. And I was right by the 310 pacer. And I was like, I have literally no idea if I can run even remotely this fast, but I'm just going to try to stick around this group and see what happens. But I'm not going to get too caught up in trying to follow the pacer exactly, because that gets a little too anxiety inducing for me. I'm just going to do my own thing, but just keep in mind like where that pacer is. So we head up, we start heading off across the Staten Island Bridge. It's impossible to run fast at that point. You're trapped, basically. I was on the lower level of the bridge, so... But no matter which level you're on, there's just so many people starting at the same time, even though they break it up into different waves and different crowds. There's just so many people. And it's honestly not worth it to try to like push your way ahead or anything at that point, because there's nowhere to go and it's just going to waste energy. So my first mile, I ended up running a 7:41, and I was just kind of going along, having fun. It's crazy because I look at my Strava and I actually went up 105 feet of elevation in that first mile, but it literally felt like nothing. I was just floating along, and then you head down and it said I went down 174 feet off the Verrazano. So that second mile was a 6:58 split. I just let myself fly. I was feeling good. I was just trying to get my legs to turn over and get used to a quicker pace and without like exhausting myself. So we finally get off the Verrazano Bridge, and at that point, you're like, okay, miles 3 to 8, you kind of just are holding steady. I was holding steady around a 7:10 pace, and I was feeling pretty good. I looked at my watch for probably the first 3 miles, but after that, I just turned my watch to just show the clock, so it just showed the time. It was like 9:35 or something at that point, and I was like, all right, it's my watch will ding, it'll buzz every single mile. So I'll look down and see where I'm at just so I can keep track like every so often. But I'm not going to constantly be looking at my pace like intra mile. Like I don't need to know how fast I'm running exactly every moment. I just need to go based off of feel. And that's something that's huge for marathon running. Like you really just need to go based off of how your body feels that day, because sometimes you can run way faster, sometimes you can run way slower. But I think for me, I've learned that sometimes when I see a really fast pace, it starts to freak me out. And I think, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I can't hold this. This is crazy. This is dumb. But I've been proving to myself time and time again now that I actually can hold way faster paces than I thought. And so I used to see faster paces and slow down. But now I just, I'm like, I can't even look at the pace because I'll freak myself out. So I'm just going to run based off of feel. So for miles 3 to 8, I was totally running based off of feel. A huge smile just plastered across my face. I kept on almost like tearing up, but like you don't want to start crying because then it's hard. You're like gasping for air. You don't want to be crying while you're running. So, and this was just the beginning. I was like, let's conserve our energy. If we're going to start crying, it's going to be later on. And for miles 3 to 8, I was bopping. I was smiling. We were running through Brooklyn. At mile 8, I saw my friend Melissa, who flew in from Colorado to watch me. And I almost missed her, but she was screaming my name so loud. I turned around, I saw her, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm buzzing. I'm flying. I was so excited. Like she was just jumping up and down, and I knew that she was so excited for me. And I was like, I'm going to run for her. Let's go. So my mile 8 was a 6:57. So under a 7 minute mile. From miles 8 to 10, I was like going basically 7 minutes or just under 7 minutes. And after that, I was like, Catherine, you got to chill out. I know you're feeling good, but you did not train to this pace. And we're 10 miles in at this point. Like you need to slow down a little bit. So from miles 11 to about 14, I slowed back down to my 7:10 pace and I locked back in and I was feeling really good. For the first 5 miles, I had been sticking with the 3:10 pacer, but for miles 5 to 10, I started to pull ahead and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to let myself pull ahead. So at this point, I'm at mile 14. I don't know where the 3:10 pacer is, but he's somewhere behind me, but not that far behind me, because I knew I hadn't sped up that much, but I was like, let me just keep running. I know that the 3:10 pacer is somewhere around me, so I know I'm in a good pace. Let's just keep going. Mile 15 and 16 for me were a little bit slower. That was going over the 59th Street Bridge. Weirdly, mile 16 was slower than mile 15, which is odd because 16 was going down the bridge and 15 was going up the bridge. But I think at that point, my legs were a little bit fatigued and I didn't want to push it. And I was also just kind of following along with the crowds and I wasn't looking at my watch. So I was just cruising. I didn't really know how fast I was going. And when I was under the bridge, this happened to me in the beginning too, like on the Verrazano, and it happened on the 59th Street Bridge. Because I was underneath the bridge, my GPS couldn't figure out where I was. So my mile times were super off. So I was like, I'm just not even paying attention to it. As you're starting to come off the bridge, because you're underneath, and so it's basically like a tunnel, it's like funneling all of the noise from First Ave up into the bridge. So you're coming off the bridge and you just hear people just screaming and you're like, it's such an out of body experience. And to me, I was like, okay, I got to mile 16. I was like, this is when the real race starts. Like, this is when it starts. It's a 10 mile race. We're starting at 16. Let's go. So I start running up First Avenue and I knew this is where I was going to see my family at mile 17. I was seeing my family, my friends, like so many people were waiting for me at mile 17. So I was absolutely flying up First Avenue. That has to be the highlight of the entire race. Like I was running like 720s, 730 on the bridge and I dropped back down to like 7 minutes flat once I was at mile 17 because I was like, oh my gosh, like this is the most electric thing. My parents were there, my grandparents, my aunts, my cousins, my sister, my friends, everyone was there. And I was like, this is the coolest moment of my entire life. You just feel like a celebrity, honestly. It's like the biggest main character moment. And you're just like shooting up First Avenue. You're finally in Manhattan. You're on your home turf. And I was feeling good. Mile 17 and 18, I'm clipping. I'm flying, again, right around a 7 minute pace. Might have been slightly too fast, but I was like, let's just see how long I can hold it. I have to say, when I did come over the halfway mark in a 1:34, I was like, whoa, I'm running very fast. Like that was probably like a 7:12 pace or something like that. Like, I knew there was a high chance that I couldn't hold that the entire time. But at that point I was in so deep. I was like, let's just keep going. We'll see how far we can take it. Don't psych yourself out. Just keep moving along. So, okay. So at this point we're at mile 18. This is where it started to get real for me. So there's 8 miles left. You're headed up First Avenue. You're pretty far up at this point. And my quads really started to start feeling it. Like they started to get crampy, they were sore, but it was nothing I couldn't handle. It was totally fine. And so for miles 19, 20, and 21, I was still moving along pretty well. Mile 20, there was a little bit of elevation there and it was a little bit of a slower mile. That was a 7:23, but on either side of that, they were like 7:10 paced miles or even faster. So up to mile 21, I was feeling good. Mile 22, I actually split a 7:15, which was totally perfect. But how I felt at that mile started the darkest moments of this entire race. It was like that was me entering the pain cave. I knew I was seeing endorphins and Vicky at mile 22 because she had told me she was going to be there. So I was just like, okay, I know I'm feeling like shit, but just get to Vicky. And then after that, I knew I was seeing my family at mile 24. And then at mile 26.2, we were done. So I was like, okay, I have all these markers in my mind. Just get to 22. I saw Vicky and I was so excited to see her. And I was trying to like scream, let's go, and have all this good energy. But nothing was coming out of my mouth. I felt like I was just going delirious. And I started to honestly freak out a little bit because there were still over 4 miles left of the race. So I pull it together a little bit, but then we get to Fifth Avenue. Fifth Avenue has to be the biggest joke. I do not remember it being that long when I ran the final 10 last weekend. It felt like it went on for an eternity. I felt like my legs weren't moving. I was running like a 7:25 split up Fifth Ave, but I genuinely felt like I was running 10-minute miles, like my legs weren't moving. At this point, I'm not looking at my watch. I'm not looking left or right. I'm not touching any more gels. I already finished my last gel. I finished my water. I'm not doing anything but trying to just move forward. And the darkness really started to set in at this point. I was like looking at the streets tick down. It was like 110th Street, and then it got to 103, and then it got to like 96 and 93. And then I'm like, I just got to get to 90 and we're turning into the park. I get to 90. I turn into the park and I hear my family scream and I see them right on my left. And I got so excited. I went to speed up, and immediately when I did that, my entire left leg and then my right leg just started cramping all down the back of my leg. Like all my hamstrings just I felt like somebody was like squeezing them together. Same thing with my calves. I started limping. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm not even able to like walk right now. So I had to make a game time decision. I fully stopped, full stop, which I haven't done that in a race in years and years and years. I think I maybe only did that once. And I was like, I was so young. So I'm scared shitless. I'm like, okay, but I have no choice because I can't even walk right now. So I stop, I bend over, I'm doing like a stretch to stretch the back of my legs out. And you know, there are people, like Central Park is very crowded and pretty narrow. So there are people screaming at you, cheering for you to try to get you to keep going. And it's like, it's such a blur. And my family was right behind me. So I was like, I don't know how far I've run. Maybe they see me. Maybe they're like getting concerned. I don't know what to do, but I stretch it out and I was able to keep going. I was like, thank goodness, because there was a chance that I was going to have to DNF the race at that point. Like everything is flooding through my mind. And by the way, DNF means do not finish. And because I posted that on TikTok and someone was asking, but that's what it means. And that was, because truly that was, I was so dark in that moment. I really couldn't walk. I don't know how to describe it any better other than like, it felt like somebody was crippling my legs. Everything is going through my mind at once. Like, oh my God, I'm not gonna be able to finish. Oh my God, like there's other people that are counting on me. Like, it's not just me. Like, I was having an existential crisis, and this is all happening within the matter of like 10 to 20 seconds. So that 24th mile was my slowest mile. I split a 7:51, which is crazy. Like once I popped out of it and I'm looking at my splits, I'm like, the fact that my slowest mile was a 7:51 is absurd. And I stopped during that mile. So I had been like moving at a pretty decent pace. So miles 25 and 26, I am like in full delirium. There are people yelling, go Catherine, go fast and flow, left on my left side, on my right side, down the whole thing. I wanted so badly to turn and look at who it was and to scream, let's go. And like, thank you. But I couldn't even turn my head left or right. I couldn't even look up. Like I was just like looking at the street in front of me, like just keep moving your legs. You're doing this for something bigger than yourself. Remember why you're running and remember that you're lucky to be here. And I just kept repeating to myself, I'm lucky to be here. I'm lucky to be here. I'm on my home turf, baby. Like we just got to get to the other side of Central Park. But for some reason, having to go out of the park onto 59th Street to Columbus Circle and then back in, that feels like the longest stretch of time possible. I remember turning out of the park by Fifth Avenue and then turning right and starting to head up towards Columbus Circle. And there was a sign that said 800 meters to go. And I felt like that last 800 meters lasted an eternity. I felt like I was never going to get to Columbus Circle. Like my legs just felt like they weren't working. And at this point I was in so deep and so dark. I was like, I took out my phone and I said, Catherine, do what you do best. Record yourself. Put a smile on your face. Mind you, I hadn't recorded anything this entire time. My phone had stayed in my spy belt the entire time. It was behind me. I didn't want to touch it. I was running way too fast to touch my phone. I didn't want to waste extraneous energy doing that. But I was like, this is it. Put a smile on your face. Remember why you're here. And smile. Smile. Like, smile for the camera. And talk to the phone. Like, just run like you do every single day. Take out your phone and record yourself. So I took out my phone, I put it on 0.5, I put it on video, and I was like, put a smile on your face because you're about to finish the best race of your life. But at this point I thought, oh my God, I've slowed down so much. Like I don't even know what pace I'm going anymore. The 3:10 pacer passed me at mile 22, and like there was no way I could keep up with him. So I didn't know how far ahead he was. I didn't know what time I was running at that point. I genuinely felt like I was running 10-minute miles, maybe even slower. Like my legs felt like lead. I felt like I was trudging through quicksand. That's the best way to describe it. And every part of me was like, I just wanted to stop. It was so painful. But I knew I had to keep going. It sounds crazy when I'm explaining it now, because you would think, why would someone in their rational mind stop at mile 25.5? But the pain is overwhelming. Like, and it's pain. It's not discomfort. It's pain. Like, you're truly in the pain cave. I finally see the sign that says 200 meters to go. The guy that's running in front of me fully passes out and falls on the ground. And I'm like trying to yell at people, at spectators to like help him. I'm pointing at him. But like, to me, everything's happening in slow motion. I feel like I'm living in a simulation. It's crazy. I see the finish line ahead of me. But my last 0.3 miles were like a 7:51 split. And you would have thought, Catherine, just speed up. You're so close. Like, but I couldn't. All I was telling myself was, it doesn't matter how fast you're running. And again, mind you, I had no idea how fast I was running at this point. I hadn't looked at my watch in miles and miles. I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't, when my watch buzzed, like indicating the mile marker, I couldn't even pick up my wrist to look at it. I was just down so bad. I said, Catherine, it doesn't matter how long it takes you to get across that finish line. Just keep going. It's so close. And so there's like 50 meters to go at this point, and I'm looking up at the clock and I see it's like 3:13:30 or something like that. And I'm like, wait, oh my God. Like that's the running time, says 3:13:30. And I know I started 2 minutes after the gun. So that means I'm like at a 3:11:30 right now. And the second I realized that, I was like, holy crap. And so I picked it up like that last couple meters as much as I could. I went right under the marker at like a 3:14. So I thought that I had run a 3:12, and I did. I ran a 3:12:03 official time. Official race results were posted, and I was a 3:12:03. So the second I looked and I realized that, it took me honestly like an hour afterwards to process, because I didn't believe the clock. Because when I tell you, it felt like I was running through quicksand, like my legs were lead. I just didn't believe the clock that said that I ran a 3:12, and I was so skeptical. I didn't know what was going on. My phone was on airplane mode the whole time because there was no service on Staten Island, and it was draining my battery, and I was trying to preserve my battery, so I just put it on airplane mode. I didn't even want text to come through or anything, so I figured it's better on airplane mode anyway. And it took me so long to even fathom that like I ran the 3:12. Initially around mile 24, I started to get disappointed, because when I had realized that 3:10 pacer started going by me, I was like, no, I'm letting it slip out of my hands, and I was so close. Meanwhile, 3:10 was never like my actual goal. It was maybe a pipe dream, and it was something that earlier on in the race, I had started running with a 3:10 pacer. And then you start thinking, well, if I just keep this up and maybe, and what if, and you know, this could happen potentially. And you kind of start holding on to this thought that this one time could happen for you. So when I felt that starting to slip away, I started to get really dark in my head, and I started to feel like, oh my gosh, I'm letting it slip away. I'm not going to accomplish my goal. But at mile 24, I had to recalibrate. I'm like, first of all, that was not even your goal. Second of all, you're about to smash your PR by so many minutes already. Just put your head down and just keep going. And I really had to reframe it. At one point around mile 25, I had looked down at my watch briefly and I saw it said 7:36. And I'm like, whoa. Because when I tell you, it sounds like maybe I'm exaggerating, but when I tell you I thought I was running 10-minute pace, like I just didn't know what was going on. For anyone who runs a marathon, I know you know what I'm talking about. The last 3 miles, it's like truly living in delirium. You feel like you're drunk, you're high, you're sick, you don't even know what's going on. You just are so out of it. It's an out-of-body experience. Somebody DM'd me and was like, I saw God. And I was like, yes, I saw God. To hell and back I went the last 3 miles, truly. But I looked down and I saw 7:36, and I was like, okay, well, that is definitely slower than the 7:10s I was splitting earlier on in the race. But the fact that you're running a 7:36 at mile 25 of a marathon, you couldn't have done that 4 months ago. Like, you couldn't have done that 2 months ago. This was something that, like, I just started believing in the last 8 weeks of training. And I was like, there's a chance. Like, what if I can get this done under 3:15? Because originally I was going for 3:20. And then I realized that goal, I was going to smash that goal. So I changed my goal to 3:15. And I ended up running a 3:12, which 3 minutes in a marathon is a lot of time. Like, I just can't even believe that I did that. But anyway, I crossed the finish line, and all I wanted to do was like collapse. But there were people who followed me who were coming up to me. They had just run too, and they were coming up to me with a smile on their face saying, congrats, like, I follow you on Instagram, how was your race? And so that honestly was really helpful because it made me keep it together. I took a picture with someone. I walked out of the park with this really sweet girl. We were talking for like 20 minutes and it was just so nice. And again, I didn't really know what was going on at that point. I didn't really fully understand like what I did until hours and hours and hours later. Like it was really later on that night that it hit me because I just couldn't even process it. Like I was riding this high. I didn't know what was going on. But eventually I came to and I started thinking about it and I started thinking about all the work I've put in. I didn't miss a single workout. No matter if I was tired, no matter the times I had to stay up until 1 to 2 a.m. to finish my work afterwards because I was so busy at work, no matter if I like didn't get enough sleep, there weren't people that were also going to run and I had to do it alone, like no matter what the circumstance was, I got it done and it was painful. Like some of those tempo runs, some of those track workouts were painful. They weren't fun. But I knew that I had to trust the process and I knew that it was something that was going to keep building on itself week over week over week for 16 weeks, right? And it's hard because you're doing all of this work, but you don't get to see it pay off for many, many months. So to tell somebody, hey, for 16 to 20 weeks, you have to put in all this work for an uncertain result. Like you won't really be able to tell that it's totally working until race day. That's a hard thing to commit to. Like you have to have ultimate trust in the process. You have to have ultimate trust in the people who are giving you the training plans. For me, that's my run club. Like I had to have ultimate trust that these plans work, that there are people who are more knowledgeable than me who are making these plans and I just have to follow them and I just have to put in the effort and keep going. And I have to run my easy runs so incredibly easy. Like this is something that helped me so much during this training cycle. Running my easy runs around 10 to 11 minute pace was extremely helpful. And then giving it all my all in my speed work and doing long tempo runs. Like every week I was doing 8 to 10 miles at marathon pace with a 2 mile warm up and 2 mile cool down. So every Tuesday I was doing 12 to 14 mile runs. Every Wednesday and Monday I was doing like 8 to 10 miles easy. Every Thursday I was doing 10 to 12 miles of a track, like with the track workout in the middle. I was doing my long runs every weekend, running 6 days a week, keeping up with my nutrition, eating a ton of protein, getting a ton of electrolytes in, getting a ton of sleep in, tracking that on my Garmin, on my Whoop, and just putting my head down, honestly. And there were definitely times that I had a lot of FOMO seeing people who are going to more social run clubs. And I just wanted to go do that. I wanted to go run and chill and hang out and vibe and have fun. And don't get me wrong, I still did that. But on the days that I had to get the work done, I had to put my head down. I had to get the work done. If I had to do it alone, I had to do it alone. But I knew that I was doing something that was going to change my life. And it did. Because first of all, I'm from New York and I live here now again after coming back, you know, after graduating from college. And so to run a marathon in your home city is truly so special. And to go from somebody who thought that 3:30 was the max that they could do, like last year when I ran a 3:30, I thought that was my maximum capacity. I thought I had laid it all out there, but I was wrong. But I really thought that was it. And I almost said, okay, you know what? That's good enough for me. But I started learning about different ways to train, better ways to train, how to incorporate, you know, speed work, tempo runs, long runs, easy runs, all correctly into a training schedule, how to push myself, how to endure discomfort for long periods of time, how to endure pain for long periods of time, how to do things when you don't feel like doing them, how to do things when you're alone, how to do things when it's dark, when it's cold, when it's raining, like how to trust yourself that you can do it. How to trust your body, how to trust your mind, how to fuel your body, how to take care of your body, take care of your mind, take care of yourself in a way that's so deeply loving instead of criticizing yourself. And it's like marathon training has changed my relationship with my body. It's changed my relationship with food. It's changed my relationship with my self-belief, my self-confidence. Like it's changed my life. Truly. And this marathon was so symbolic for me because it went from me like really not believing in myself 2, believing that I can do anything I set my mind to. And 3, 12 is beyond my wildest dreams, truly. And the crazy thing is, this is just the beginning. Like, this is just the beginning of me believing in myself. And I'm going to take it as far as I can go with marathons, but, you know, it's just this mentality that I can apply to anything, whether it's training for something like an Ironman, or whether it's helping other people achieve their marathon goals, or just starting a company and really going after it for something I believe in, like just putting my heart and soul into whatever I do. Because when you put your heart and soul into whatever you do, the outcome is not an accident. The outcome is a result of you working so hard and working so strategically and day in and day out, no matter what, showing up for yourself and keeping the promises that you make to yourself. And I can't even put it into words, but I know that you guys know what I'm talking about. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for following along, because this is, running is my biggest passion. I can't even believe what just happened in this past week. Partnering with Nike for the marathon was insane. Getting invited to the Nike dinner, the pre-race dinner, was insane, with like just the Nike coaches and Nike athletes and people that I followed on Instagram for so long. And the fact that people are messaging me, just that I've inspired them to run a race, I've inspired them to run any distance, but half marathon, a marathon, I've inspired them to train harder and to go for faster times and believe in themselves. And don't get me wrong, like, running isn't all about going as fast as you can. There are going to be many, many marathons that I run where I just absolutely soak in the atmosphere and just run party pace and pace other people who are maybe trying to go sub-4 or just anything else, so I can enjoy the race and take it all in and soak it all in and not be in the absolute pain cave. That's exciting to me too. But when you are in the mood to train for something and set yourself a goal that you are scared for, you're fucking scared for, like, the fact that I ran a 3:12, I can't even believe it, guys. I really can't. It's really cool when you can be your own biggest inspiration. This entire podcast is just a random brain dump at this point right now. But anyway, I'm going to wrap it up because it's getting really long. But much more to come on the marathon, much more to come on training in general. I'm moving into a heavy strength training season, so I'm going to be sharing all of that, and then we'll get back to running when it gets a little bit into the spring. But I just hope you guys know that I'm the type of person that no matter what I do, when I decide to do something, like, I'm going all in. That's just how I am. I'm a very intense person, so I can't just half-ass something. Like, when I decide I'm doing something, I'm doing it with my full ass, you know what I mean? But anyway, thank you from the bottom of my heart again for following along. Thank you for tracking me, for cheering for me, for sending me messages, for telling me that I inspired you. Like, that is why I'm doing this. Like, the last 2 miles, when I felt like it was truly impossible, I thought about you guys. I thought about who I'm doing this for, who I'm inspiring, who I'm showing that you can break through your own boundaries. Like, it's you guys. And that's, you guys are the reason I was able to get through those last 2 miles. So thank you so much. And oh yeah, New York City Marathon 2023, you changed my life. You changed my life. If you're ever thinking about running a marathon and you weren't sure, I hope you really consider it, because again, no matter how fast you run, a marathon will change your life. It really will. Like, I dare you to run a marathon and not have it change your life. So anyway, I love you so much. Thank you so much. And I will talk to you guys next week. Bye.